April 16th, 1986, Marsha Ripp and Chuck Coffey at the home of Ann Albert for the National Council of Jewish Women's Oral History Program. Okay, Mrs. Albert, in reviewing the tapes of the two-hour interviews we had, it seemed to me that we didn't speak very much of the time between Hitler's coming to power in 1938. Could you reflect on that period?
On that period?
Yes.
Alert Austrians felt from 1936 on that the country was doomed. Chancellor Schuschnigg had gone to Berlin, to our mind, as a supplicant, with Hitler, making so-called pacts and agreements with him not to invade Austria. But we knew, especially the Jews knew, that there was coming the day where Hitler just wouldn't keep his word. And in the beginning of March, we knew that he was massing troops in the south of Germany, and that the attack force was getting ready. Although some of us knew exactly that the Austrian, so-called Austrian military force, was no power to resist the German, even if they had been willing. But we also knew that the anti-Semitic national socialistic idea had undermined all the officers and the military in Austria. When on March 11th, the troops marched across the border and marched into the country, it was a terrible shock, but really not a surprise to political watchers. And if you want to know the personal impressions or shocks that I personally had, on that night I knew exactly that there was no staying for us, for my family and my husband and me. And there was no way of planning. Strangely enough, we knew there was no future for us, but we hadn't been able to plan anything in the outside world, and we hoped for help from somewhere. I can tell you, we looked in the skies and hoped the American planes would come, but they never came, they never showed up. When on March 11th at night, I saw the German soldiers march through the cities, through the streets under my window. I knew exactly that was the end. Eight abreast and singing, "When Jewish blood flows off our knives, then the world will be safe." And that was a melody that penetrated everything. And I personally sat down and started pulling the books by Jewish authors and the books on socialism out of my shelves and started burning them because I felt there was nothing to save but our own lives. My husband, who was at work in a news agency, phoned. We knew the phones were tapped, phone that his boss happened to be a German Jew, said, in some branches in Bulgaria or somewhere in the Balkans, there would be a job for him. I knew exactly what that meant. That meant we had to get out. But there was no way. We felt like mice trapped. And my parents, who had an open store, all were in the same position, not having any relatives in foreign countries. Nobody told us how to go about saving ourselves or doing anything for our family or what the next step should be. We just were stunned. On March 13th, I believe it was the 13th and not the 11th, the Austrian Chancellor, Schuschnigg, gave an address over the radio, there was no TV then yet, saying goodbye to his country with tears in his voice that he had tried everything to save Austria's independence, but to no avail, and he hoped the country would survive, and no matter what happens to him personally, he would always be an Austrian. Well, years later, we found out that he had been able to flee to America and taught in one of the southern universities. He was not too much concerned about the Jews, but his greatest concern was about Catholics, which was correct, because to much lesser degrees than Jews, the Catholics also suffered from the Nazi persecution. What happened after that, we just lived in sort of a limbo, when, to me personally, the final blow came when I got a phone call from the daughter of a neighboring business person to come down right away to the store. And I found a big crowd around my father and mother kneeling on the sidewalk trying to scrub off the small brushes of political sign that had been painted on the sidewalk. And the crowd standing around and acting in a perfect Nazi way. And a neighbor's young son who came by, who had been my childhood friend, whom I helped through school, came in an SS uniform, which is the superior, which is a black uniform. And when I appealed to him and grabbed his lapels, he said, "You are soiling me. Keep your hands off me." And all I could say was standing there in tears and saying my Shema Yisrael, and that was all we could do. And after 2 hours or so, the crowd, when the buckets were empty, the crowds let my parents go. The windows were broken with long poles that the crowd somehow cut and pulled at the windows of the store. And from then on, my parents didn't go down to the store anymore. It was locked. They locked it and didn't go there anymore. And we tried desperately to get to any foreign embassy, and everybody closed their borders. Some people fled the same night, already the night of the 11th. I have had a friend who was a dentist and psychologist, and he took his 6 weeks old, his wife and his 6 weeks old baby, and took a train to the Italian border without a visa. And when the inspection came, he pulled out his doctorate, which was in Latin, which nobody understood, and said, "This is an entry visa into Italy," and they let him pass, and he saved himself that way. And you heard the weirdest story, people taking a train or taking a bicycle to the Swiss border, which was as impenetrable as you could imagine, and walked through the woods and over the mountains. Nights, some managed illegally some managed with bribes. There were, after a day or two, there were smugglers already with open hands, and some made it that way. But if you didn't have the courage to do that, you still were trapped like a mouse inside. And for me personally, well, we tried everything. Rumors went around. You could get a visa to Kenya, and the women flocked to all the embassies to try to get a visa, because we kept the men at home. Rumors going around that were later substantiated, that the men were grabbed in the streets by the SR and SS and taken to first the Viennese, infamous Viennese police station, and which had to take larger quarters in a big hotel on the Danube, the Hotel Metropole. And from there on, they were shipped to various concentration camps. So we tried to hide the men. When the doorbell rang, the woman opened the door. Well, anyway, I went one evening to the American embassy, where people were in long lines already, women were in long lines waiting for the opening in the morning. And all we could get was an application form, where it said distinctly that the quota for each country's immigrants was a closed one. The quota was a certain number, and that we were given numbers in order of which our immigration was allowed, pending approval of certain legal and financial documents. We just had to sit and wait for the time to be called. And in the meantime, we were not idle. We tried to get permission to, I tried Mexico, I tried, as I say, Kenya. That was the top. And there just wasn't any way but sit and wait it up. But we knew that we had to get an affidavit of support from an American citizen residing in the United States, who would, by his tax returns, prove that he was able to support us, and by letters from authorities and that he was willing to keep the immigrant from ever becoming a burden to the United States, financial or otherwise. Now, we didn't have a person, we didn't know of any person in the United States that would do that for us. We didn't know anybody. An uncle of my husband's, Professor Leopold Freund, was a well-known researcher and professor at the medical school of the University of Vienna, and had many foreign students come to his courses. We asked him if he could have any of the names or addresses, whereupon he gave us a list of names with no addresses practically, just maybe city addresses. And we got together our curricula vitae, and my husband and I, and sent these in registered letters to 60 addresses to unknown people in the United States. And that was toward the end of March. Knowing that the addresses were uncertain, most of them were not even accepted by the post office when we tried to register them. The end of May, we received one letter from New York City, where a Dr. Max Wolf and his wife told us in a personal letter that they are in the process of making an affidavit of support for us. And also gave us a terrible shock because he wrote in his letter, "I don't think that Hitler will try anything to massacre the Jews," since we knew everything went through censorship. We were scared to death that something would happen to us having this correspondence with a foreign country. But somehow we were lucky and nothing happened. So we had this one hope and tried to register the boat trip, which we were, alas, not able to do because the companies only accepted the visa in your passport upon which they would sell the tickets. But that was not all. The first thing was to get the permission to exit the country. The permission was based on documents that you did not owe any tax. Now, there wasn't just one tax in Austria. You had a dog, you had to prove. But even if you didn't have a dog, as in our case, we had to prove that we didn't owe a dog tax. We had to prove that we didn't owe any hospital anything. We had to prove that we didn't owe any rent, that we had no other debts. Which is easier said than done, because there were 200,000 of us that tried to do this. And none of the officers, of course, were cooperative in this respect. Then, after we had all these documents, where I have a very scary memory, which at least 30 years afterwards gave me nightmares, there was one office where you could stand all night in line, and in the morning they would only take 50 people and then close it, not see anybody else. You had to try the next night. Remember, always in danger of being snapped from the street, taken to concentration camps. Somebody said, if you bribe the janitor at that side door, he would leave, the office is open at 8, he would let you in 5 minutes before 8. You come in a side door and mix in the crowd of the first 50 and go in. I knew it was a cheat, but you save your life and you do whatever you can. So I did that, and I was sent, the man sent me to a, I don't know, third floor, fourth floor, in which I still remember the columns standing in the halls, and he said, hide behind the column. And first the officers came into their offices in groups, talking and walking, the one in this office, the one in that. And I just did not know under which angle I was to hide behind which column. Now it's like a scary movie. I bet Woody Allen would make fun of it. But it was not fun. I was scared to death that I would be discovered and that would be the end of me. And as I say, I had nightmares for years and years of dream where I'd stand behind a column, a thin column, trying to hide there. And just as years before at the university, there were pogroms against Jewish students. And you fled, if you could, down. If you couldn't, you fled up the stairs. And I had a nightmare that I would run upstairs, and all of a sudden, I was in nothing. The stairs ended, and there was just the sky above me, and there was no way down that they would catch me there. But thank God I got that behind me. Well, I got the signature on that document that I didn't owe many city tax, I think that was. And then when you had all these papers together, you were to apply for a new passport, because we all had Austrian passports, which were declared invalid. And we had to apply for German passports. For those, you applied at your local police station. For that station, you had to apply document that you never were arrested, that you had never been in jail, that you, all kinds of. By the way, in Austria, there was a system where you had to register within the first 3 days, any place you located yourself. When you registered in a hotel, in a summer resort, the desk clerk would register you to the police right away. You had to do that within the first 3 days. Well, anyway, we were all registered. If anybody from any country of the world would come to Vienna and look for a person with such and such a name in former times, he could go to the police station and find your address. That was their thoroughness of registration. Well, there was the question of getting the passport. Of course, the passport would have a big J stamped on it. I still have it. And we all, without application, without our own will or being asked, acquired a second name. The women were all called Sarah, and the men were all called Israel. My husband's name was Carl Israel Albert. My name was Ann Sarah Albert, although my Jewish name is Hinde, but nobody asked for that. And his name was David. The question was how to get. We were just scared to go to the police office to apply for that. So little travel agencies all of a sudden shot up from the ground, advertised at one of the sidelines. They advertised, of course, trips, but that one of the sidelines would be supplying passports. And we went to one of the agents. He had to pay a terrific amount to get our passport. For some people who couldn't afford a passport for each person had man and wife together, but we chose to have, we could afford to have separate passports. But that wasn't easy because those travel agencies were under surveillance. And we had one, we had chosen one, where the man took us at 4 a.m. through a side street to the rear door of his office, where he worked with us. And he took the passport, and he took it to the police presidium. So that was what really spared ourselves. And then we had the passport, which we, of course, treasured highly, because we were to apply this to the American consulate, which we hoped would soon let us know where we stood. In September, I believe it was September, we got a notification that on the 21st of November, 1938, we would have our physical and personal examination at the American consulate. 21st of November. On the 10th of November, the Nazis destroyed synagogues, took the last away that any Jew ever had, and came to the apartment, which at that time my parents and my husband and I shared. An hour before that group of SS rowdies came to apartment, a distant relative of my husband's, who was a Gentile, wonderful woman, knocked at our door, and she had the swastika sign on, and said, "Give me what you want to say." Of course, we didn't have much, because the banks were closed, we couldn't take anything out of the bank. I had a few very tiny pieces of jewelry, the rest was not at home, and a little bit of cash, but whatever we had, that person saved for us.
You're speaking of a process that took 2.5 years, from March...
No. It was
March
all within 1 year.
Did you originally say 1936?
38. No, 36 was the attempt by Schuschnigg to stem the Nazis from coming in. That was 36.
Oh, so they crossed
the border. We lived in fear. If we had been smart, we would have done something within those 2 years. We really waited till they crossed the border.
They crossed border in March of 38.
Then. That's right.
Okay.
March of 38, yes. And my gratitude to that person never ends. She's in her 80s now. We gave her and her daughter, later on when we could afford it, we made out an affidavit of support for her. Although not Jewish, but we brought her to this country, and she's forever grateful. The other affidavits that we made out were not successful because they were for Jews who didn't survive. On March 10th, we still lived through the Kristallnacht, which was a consequence of a happening that's well known in history by now. A desperate young Jewish man, son of Polish parents, who were expelled from Germany and tried to go into Poland, were repelled by Poland and were shoved back and forth across the border. And Grimberg was so desperate that he lived in Paris. He went to the German consulate in Paris and shot the consul. And believe it or not, all Jews prayed for the man's survival, because we knew what would happen if that man died. But finally he did die, and as a consequence, the Kristallnacht happened. That's when my parents and I were thrown out of our apartments. We had 2 hours to pack and get out. Getting out was easier said than done. We didn't know where to go. We knew an old woman 2 blocks away who had a big apartment. And I ran there and I asked her if she would take us in, and she said she would. Took my parents and my husband and me, and we slept on the floor there. My husband's parents lived in a neighboring district. We were scared to get in touch with them over the phone, and we also couldn't walk the streets. But finally, we got through to them. Our mother told us that she was picked up at midnight to scrub on her knees the Nazis' office there, a huge hall. And at 6 in the morning, she was sent home, and she considered herself very lucky. That day, we packed as much as we could in 2 suitcases for each person and walked out of the place, which we just had remodeled, although it was a rented apartment, and left what we couldn't carry in that place.